Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
After 22 years of being a titan on Wall Street and starting his own firm, Tony Kasai is walking away to share the ugly side of being on the inside. We'll interview insiders and other titans of all types of industries, offering advice and sharing stories of adversity.
Now let's go.
This is another episode of The Insider Show.
Welcome to Cannabis Talk 101's Financial Fridays with the inside investor, Tony K. We're the world's number one source for everything cannabis.
The information provided by Financial Friday and Tony Kasai is for general information and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered as professional financial advice. Consult with a professional before making any financial decisions.
Yo, I don't know where you're at, what you're doing, or what day of the week it is for you, but over here at the CT101 iHeart Studios, it is Financial Fridays for us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Tony K, and I'm here to get your mind right and your money game tight. Feel free to leave me a financial question anytime at 1-800-420-1980. You can also connect with me directly on Instagram at The Inside Investor. And of course, you all know that my number one rule of money is that your health is your wealth. You can't be wealthy if you're not healthy. That's why I want to, of course, talk about my friends over at Rising Tide Benefits. You guys, this is an insurance healthcare platform. It is dedicated to not just the cannabis community, but anybody that still wants healthcare coverage. It is a misconception that you are out if you did not apply by January 1st. These guys can get you covered. All it takes is one quick phone call to them, set up an appointment. They got three options for you, and they're all free. The first one is they're going to tell you you're in good hands and that you have great insurance and that they can't beat it. Number two, they're going to tell you that they're going to give you more insurance at a cheaper price. And number three, they're going to tell you that they got you covered for sure. Give them a call over at risingtidebenefits.com. Better yet, give them a call, 214-446-5300. Now, ladies and gentlemen, last Friday, we were off air because the guys here were celebrating 420. We had an amazing show with the Hulu cast of the new show called High Hopes, right?
Yes. Man,
and it's a phenomenal cast and crew. We had some good times with them out in LA. Looking forward to them getting renewed for a second season.
Totally.
And they've become good friends of the show now. Looking forward to having some of the cast members on the show. But today, ladies and gentlemen, after much persuasion from my podcast papa, Joe Grande, he's like, Tony, you're the financial guy. Why are you not talking about, you know, cannabis stocks or stocks in general or just the overall economy? And I have three or four really big hot button topics that have been in the news here in the past week, Connor. And I wanted to invite my good friend Connor to the show. He's our sound engineer over here at Cannabis Talk 101. He's one of our superstars. And this young man, you know, in addition to traveling the globe, being a professional, semi-professional soccer player, what I'm saying, before he hurt himself or just decided he wanted to get into something different.
Yep. Switched it up, pivoted. Luckily, it was COVID happened like right after. So I would have been stuck abroad anyway and not been able to play. So it worked out.
It's all meds to me. And, you know, if you guys listen to the main show here on Cannabis Talk 101, Connor's dived into some really good, interesting topics. I love his feedback, and that's why I wanted to invite him on the show. But today I want to talk about a couple of topics. I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about, Connor. First thing is the Federal Trade Commission has announced that non-competes are going to be basically banned going forward nationwide. It's a huge thing. And for most of you that are employees or employers, I want to dive into that. I want to get your opinion on it. And then I'm going to give you my take. I want to talk about the Crypto Banking Center and now the Crypto Banking Act that's coming out through Congress right now. They're talking about tying that into the FAA, believe it or not, the Federal Aviation Commission.
Yeah, what?
But it's some crazy shit that Congress does to combine different bills to make sure that one of them either dies or that they both pass. But it's something that I think will affect everybody, whether you are in cannabis or not, especially from the crypto aspect. And then I also want to talk about Tilray Stock. This is a Canadian company. It seems like any one of my friends, colleagues, clients, former clients who hit me up, they're like, what do you think of this stock? What do you? And I've been hearing about it for so many times, for so long now, that I do want to dive into it, give you my viewpoints on it, and hear your feedback as well, because I know you're very interested in this space.
For
sure. So we got a lot to cover, man. I'm going to dive right into it. Now, the FTC con, I'm going to tell you the exact ruling, what they're doing.
Yeah, break it
their
down.
Their final rule will generate, supposedly, this is their spin on it. It's going to create 8,500 new businesses each year. It's going to raise worker wages, and it's going to lower healthcare costs and boost innovation. Now, that's the spin. And as you know, we've gone down many rabbit holes here on my show,
yeah.
But every time they tell me something's good for me, I immediately think, okay, they're lying to me or there's a different agenda. Now, here's the take on it. For most of you that doesn't understand, what a non-compete is basically if you're an employee, right? So if you're an employee here of Cannabis Talk 101 and we wanted to put you on a non-compete, we would say, hey, you cannot work in any capacity with any media firm for the next 3 years, for example.
Yep.
Now, this is an at-will agreement. We didn't hold a gun to your head, but you would have signed a contract that then allows me to come after you if all of a sudden you go work for a competing media company. I don't even know who would be bigger than us, but if that's what you were going to do. Now, the position that puts me in is it allows me to protect my trade secrets, right?
Yes,
if totally. You had a secret sauce here that we're doing and all of a sudden you want to go to my competitor, maybe you were going to take a job here from us just to find everything out that we're doing so you could take it somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
So the non-competes is not something that's designed to hold a little man down, but it was created with capitalism, with the thought process that, hey, if you want to work for us, here's the parameters. If you don't like it, go work somewhere else. So I don't know what your opinion or anybody else could argue against this, because to me, capitalism, like right now, every time new legislation, new regulation, new just rules come out, I'm not a big fan of rules.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a bit of a blanket ruling where, you know, it's not quite hitting certain stipulations that may be good or bad for a non-compete agreement. Like I was reading some reactions of the whole ruling, and you know, there's people who were, you know, stuck at a certain job and they weren't able to quit due to non-compete agreements, and like, you know, the reaction from the government is that, you know, that I think they want to keep they would prefer to keep the non-compete agreement, but you know, ultimately, you know, like I said, I think it's just too general of a ruling for that whole scenario.
It's too general. And then, you know, the spin on it is that it's creating more jobs, with the thought process being that if you weren't happy here and you had a non-compete, I'm stopping you from going and starting your own company. I'm stopping you from going and getting another job. So this argument is that, you know, it's stifling job creation, where the alternative to that is they've carved out, now to your point, it's very broad. They did carve out that if you make over, I believe it's like about $190,000, you're exempt from that. The rule has about 180-day grandfather period. There's a 90-day, there's a lot of little restrictions on it.
Mm-hmm.
The Chamber of Commerce, which is a very, some would say, liberal organization that everybody knows who the Chamber is. If you've been a business owner, you get this letter that says, hey, be a member of the Chamber of Commerce. They're actually suing the FTC. And they're standing up and saying, no, this is not true. This is going to stifle competition. This is going to create, in my opinion.
Yes, that's what I read.
Yeah,
that's
man. I think for me as a business owner, I think the thing that freaks me out the most is, now the government's again getting into your business, telling you how you can hire your employees, right? If this was an exploitative ruling or practice that, you know, allows me to hold somebody hostage, or, you know, I forced you to sign this contract after you were hired, I can understand that. We got to protect, you know, the employees. But if this is an at-will employment where you came in with full knowledge, and of course they carve out industries that are in their benefit, you know, aerospace, civil defense, et cetera, of course they're going to figure out a way to carve out and protect their donors of whoever's funding Congress at any given time. But every time I see a new ruling and legislation like this, I'm like, all right, what's the agenda? What bullshit are they putting on the business owner? And they're stifling, you know, especially here in California,
they're just suffocating business owners to death.
Crazy. It's a sad landscape in California right now. Like, a lot of people obviously don't live here to see it, but you know, you got a lot of businesses closing, a lot of industries are failing. Big cities aren't doing too hot right now. So it's definitely bleak at the moment.
Now, the final rule will become effective in about 120 days, it looks like, after publication. And once it's effective, again, there is a grandfather period for people that have already signed it. Mm-hmm. I've read conflicting. I mean, again, the guys, this thing just came out yesterday. And the number that I quoted earlier, it's actually $151,164 of earners that are exempt from this ruling. And it's interesting how they did that, right? Because arguably, the guy who is the CEO or a vice president making a couple hundred thousand a year, he's exempt.
Yeah.
And this ruling is here to supposedly protect the smaller employees and create more jobs. But your typical employee who's making 50, 60,000 a year, he's not going out and trying to start his own company. You know what I'm saying?
The CEO has the, you know, aspirations, right? Exactly. To be able to go and do that. And they have the wherewithal, the knowledge and all that. It's an easy pivot for them, essentially, on
thank
paper.
You. Yeah. So that's the contradictions that I'm seeing. And, it, you know, after reading it a couple of times, I'm seeing several of these contradictions where it's like, all right, if this is supposed to create new job opportunities, that would involve somebody starting a company, taking a risk and starting a new business. But the guys who are making the big bucks are exempt from this. So I can, you know, lock in some of my higher level C-level executives, but I cannot lock in my lower employees. And quite frankly, I would not be surprised if I really had the time, energy, or just soul to go down another rabbit hole. I would not be surprised if large groups of law firms and legal lobbyists are behind this, because I'm already seeing that this is going to create massive legalities around trade secrets. Because while it's now going to become supposedly illegal for me to lock you in under a non-compete, what it's not doing is allowing me to say, okay, well, you've also signed something that says you won't take any of our clients or trade secrets and blah, 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 right? Yeah. So I can still enforce that, but I can't stop you from going and working for somebody else. Well, guess what's going to happen? You're going to go work for, you know, another media company in this example, right? You're going to take a Rolodex of our clients, you know, contacts, et cetera. And all of a sudden, you're going to exploit that. And now I'm going to create lawsuits after you, your company, your law firm. The mortgage industry is massive in this, right? It's a very, you know, they steal from, not steal from each other, but they recruit, you know, books of business. So if you're a really top dog at a mortgage company and I'm Rocket Mortgage, I want you to come over and bring your 4,000 people that you've done refis for in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
And there's been massive lawsuits where people have gone and done this under the radar. They get caught and there's 10, $20 million lawsuits, not just against that employee, but the company that recruited them, because that company, you know, there's email documentation encouraging that. So I wouldn't be surprised. And again, this is pure speculation, that this is really a way for the government to just, again, have another hand on the small business owner or even large business owner,
yeah,
getting another rule, legislation in. But more importantly, I think it's just going to create more frivolous lawsuits, going to create, tie up the courts more. And I just, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong. If somebody has some different viewpoint, please call, leave me a message, whatever. I'm open-minded on this one. I'm not locked in, but I'm just looking at it. And they didn't do this out of the kindness of their hearts, you know, to say that it's going to create, and this is straight from the FTC's website,
yeah,
that it is going to create 8,500 new businesses each year.
Where they get that metric from, you
dude?
Know
that
what I'm
that didn't even sound like a lot, to be honest with you, dude. 8,500 out of a country of 350 million people, yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it just seems like they're throwing a bunch of crap out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of back end information here. So you're on board with this then? We're in alignment in terms of how I'm looking at it, or am I being an asshole looking at it from a top wage and earner?
No, I agree. I mean, it, you know, just, you know, another mode of control.
Yeah.
You know, and it just looks like a shitty elevator pitch being delivered.
Yeah.
When you look at it and, you know, what they're proposing. So, you know, I agree. I think it's kind of lame.
Well, and then, you know, the final point on this, and then I think we could move on, is if it's truly, you know, Big Brother, Congress, the government looking out for us, it's like, dude, you spent 3 years destroying businesses during the last, you know, situation here we had that was controversial. and you've destroyed all these businesses you didn't give a shit about. You've raised taxes on business owners. So all of that was okay.
And then why is it going to change now?
Exactly. And now all of a sudden, out of the goodness of your heart, you're trying to create 8,500 new businesses each year. So yeah, guys, I mean, read between the lines. If you've listened to the show, you know that one of my things, just ask questions, ask the hard questions. Don't just get spoon fed information. And you'd be surprised at how just really understanding that what you're reading and seeing, whether however you're consuming your news and your knowledge about your money, you know, dive in a little bit deeper. Talk to business owners. If you're an employee thinking this is a great idea, talk to some business owners. You know, look at their viewpoint and kind of look at the other aspect of this and ask yourself, why would the government be making this ruling? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think it's going to be challenged in the courts. It's going to be something that's going to play out here in the next 3 to 6 months. And I'd love to come back to this episode and revisit it. But my prediction on this is that it's going to go through. I think it's going to have minimal changes in it. They'll probably tweak the numbers a little bit. And I would not be surprised if there's a flood of lawsuits that attack not just this ruling, but after this ruling gets challenged and probably gets enforced, that it's going to create a flood of lawsuits around mortgage companies, real estate companies, financial services companies. I mean, I remember when I was the last big firm I worked at, UBS and Morgan Stanley, you know, I was on a 7-year contract for my signing bonuses. And if I left halfway through, I'd owe $1 million back, you know? So all of those, it'll be interesting to see how they're enforced. The other thing I'd love to find out is who funded the lobbying of this.
I was gonna ask, what was the buildup and like, who is the one heading this whole situation? Like, do we know, is it public information yet?
Well, that's one of the reasons I love you when you're not just up here and you're back there, because you always are able to dig this stuff up in real time. But I also like the free flow conversation that you bring to the table. So I didn't do that background, but I will have that answer for you. But I will, and that sometimes it's not apparent, right? It'll be like CLC consulting and lobby firm. Then you really got to go down and dive
follow the money.
Honor the money and who funded that, who lobbied for it, and who paid for it. So that's my take on the FTC, guys. You're going to see this a lot in the news. We'll be right back here on Financial Fridays, CT101 iHeartRadio. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the Financial Friday 5 on Cannabis Talk 101's Financial Fridays with the insider investor, Tony K.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101's Financial Fridays with the insider investor, Tony K. It's now time for the Financial Friday 5.
If you ever find yourself caught up and you need a lawyer, you guys, give my friends Freddie Sage a call, man. This is the attorney that you want to handle your criminal defense, cannabis law, entertainment law, any kind of law needs. He's going to take care of you guys. Give him a call. He's over at the Fox Firm. That's with two X's, thefoxfirm.com. He's got you covered. And not just that, guys. And, you know, this isn't just a promotional read, but Freddie's just been a good friend of the show. He's helped a lot of people here at the show, a lot of my friends, a lot of our mutual clients. But he's somebody that I trust inexplicably. And if you ever have that need, give him a buzz. He'll help you out at thefoxfirm.com with UXs. We're now back here with my man, Connor. He's our sound engineer here at Cannabis Talk 101 on iHeartRadio. And he's somebody that I've become good friends with. I super admire his not just opinions and his takes. Sometimes we don't agree, but he makes me sometimes look at things differently. And sometimes he knows things a little bit more than me. You know, I think you're, what, at least 10, 15 years younger than me?
I'm 24 right now. So.
Okay, so yeah, something like that. I think I'm almost twice his age. But and there is value to that, guys. I always try to look for the nuggets to teach you guys of how you can make money. And I think one of the lessons I learned on Wall Street was some of these old-timers would always just hang around with each other. And I found that the ones that were giving the best advice to their clients would have the best stock picks, would have the best, you know, ideas that were a little bit outside the box. They would surround, they would become the mentors to us, some of the newer guys, some of the rookies, if you will. And I found that those guys were always a little bit more advanced. They had the best technology. They had the best tips. They had the best ways to not just make their clients money, but to make their lives easier. So one of the reasons I try to surround myself with people, not just that are more higher than me, older than me, more wise than me, like Joe is, you know, in this industry, but I also like to rely on people that are younger than me and hear their viewpoints and hear what the latest trends are and what the latest ideas are. Cause you never know when that aha moment's going to come. You never know when you're going to be able to make money by meeting the right person that just opens your eyes. And crypto is one of those things for me, man. I want to touch on now, you know, the relevance of this new legislation. Again, this thing I think just came out yesterday or the day before, but the crypto markets is something that has been just such a roller coaster since its inception, right? And you get a lot of these newer guys that haven't been burnt, that hadn't seen, you know, the dot-com bubble burst, the tech bubble burst, the recessions. And when crypto came out and really took off, everybody kind of had this FOMO, and I call it the cycle of fear. And it's the same thing with the stock market, quite frankly, but it's like when something's at an all-time high, the Denny's waitress is talking about trading it. You know, my mom, who never knows, talks about cryptos, all of a sudden talk about Bitcoin.
It's too late.
And when everybody's talking about it is when everybody piles in, right? And whether you made money or you just got in at the high and now it starts to fall. And again, stock market's the same way. It starts coming down. If you think about it like a clock, you're at the 3 p.m. point and it's really coming down the hill. And that's when people are like, oh shit, should I sell now? Should I sell now? And right when it hits about 6 o'clock, when they're at the absolute freaking lowest, is when everybody starts to sell, right?
Panic.
And then that's when you see, you know, companies like Chase getting into it. And, you know, Diamond, the CEO of Chase, who said, I'll never touch it. And Warren Buffett, who said it's bullshit. Now, all of a sudden, these big players are getting in the game. And now the clock starts swinging at about 9 o'clock. And everybody who just lost their money is getting FOMO, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And right around 10, 11 o'clock is all of a sudden that cycle continues. And so for me, crypto has been that. And I cannot say that I'm an expert at it in the least bit. I everything I just described to you, I've gone through several times on several cycles with crypto. Then it was the shit coins, which, you know, for those of you that don't know, I think there's like 20,000 different coins that you can buy now that people can create on their own, and they're tied to different things. And then you had the NFT model. So it's such the wild, wild west. And again, the government, I think, is trying to figure out how they can make money on it, how they can tax us, how they can track the money. And it did start off in a very nefarious space, right? With the whole Silk Road thing where people were using
dude, the dark web. That shit was popping.
Do you know how to use the dark web?
Oh, yeah. I've been on that shit. Got the Tor browser. We're all good.
Oh, man. That's why I love talking to you. Yeah. So, no, I never went down that rabbit hole. Because, I know once I go down it, I'll be on the computer 24/7. Because
unlike anyway.
Right? And unlike the stock market, the crypto market specifically, they're 24/7, 365. So, you know, I love gambling. I love taking chances, but it's one of those things to where, you know, you can gamble on it at any time, and it does become pretty addicting, right?
Totally. I mean, you just see your homie like rake in 100K profit from, you know, investing in some random coin, and it's like, what's stopping you from doing that? But, you know, you have to play the game right, and like, don't be reactionary with it. Like, do your own research and, you know, figure out what you want to invest in for yourself, like what makes you feel good and all that kind of shit. So like, you can't just expect to buy like fucking Dogecoin and then, you know, be a millionaire after, you know. It takes a little bit more thought than that.
Yeah. You know, I It's interesting on that note, because I think most people don't really understand. I was in this networking group in Dallas, a lot of high level CEOs, basically you had to be a business owner and had to have a decent business to even be a member of it. I think it costs like 30 grand a year. But in there, this was at the heyday of the Dogecoins and all these other crap coins that would come out. And people would tell me, oh, I got a $3 million portfolio, $2 million portfolio. And unlike the stock, I'm like, yeah, but you haven't sold it yet. You know what I'm saying? You don't have that money until you hit send, you hit sell, it converts to freaking the 18 other coins you had to convert to convert it back to cash. Then you have to figure out how the hell to get the money out of the system without, you know, getting just raped with taxes in terms of capital gains. And everybody didn't understand that, yes, the government will catch up with this. You got short-term capital gains, you got long-term capital gains. In fact, the other day in the Coinbase, I try to access my account. It's like, unless you go through these things and things, which means now they're going to be reporting every single transaction, that you can't even, you know, do a transaction more than a few bucks or something silly like that, which again, you know, it's we saw that coming. There's a new thing that came out that kind of bridges the two industries that we're talking about right now, where Congress could include a marijuana banking bill in an FAA crypto bill. And again, you know, from
wild
the last segment,
synergy right there.
For those of you that don't know, the FAA is the Federal Aviation Agency, right? Let me read you what this bill is doing. Supporters of a long-awaited marijuana banking reform are pinning hopes on Congress packaging a cannabis bill with must-pass legislation. Congress has yet to get the Safer Banking Act across the finish line, despite almost decades of trying and repeated success in the House of Representatives. As they've reported, a marijuana reform slash crypto bill would be included in a must-pass Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization bill. And again, just surface reading, what the hell does the FAA have to do with banking and have to do with crypto?
So it's a wild little concoction. Why don't you break it down for me? I have my ideas, but I know you probably have a better one.
This one actually had left me dumbfounded. There was another topic I was going to talk about today, but when I came across this, and you know, this thing came out literally today. I think it was being talked about yesterday, but it came out today, and it hasn't become, you know, the safer banking thing is something they've been trying to do. And for those of you not in California, you know, California is the cannabis capital of the world. And we've been doing this. We're the gold standard, supposedly, of you know, rolling out legal cannabis consumption.
But pushing the culture.
That's 100% it. And I've learned that being here, and I've seen it now traveling and seeing how far behind some states are, like Texas, Tennessee. You know, Oklahoma's kind of caught up, which was a little shocking. But one of the biggest problems for anybody in the space out here that touches the plant, sells the plant, or mostly has a dispensary or farm, is that you're dealing with mountains of cash. And, you know, the banks, because they have a FDIC charter, they're federally regulated, blah, blah, blah. Because it's still federally illegal, they didn't want to touch offering banking solutions to the average person or the average dispensary, et cetera, et cetera. So all these other ancillary businesses popped up. I remember these ATMs where you were, you know, buying Bitcoin at the dispensary that was converting into cash. Everybody was coming up with creative so shit, right? Yeah. Or gosh, these ATM machines inside the dispensaries were just crushing it.
Oh my God, the crazy fees.
It's like more than a strip club ATM, right?
Yeah, like it rips off further than like currency exchange. Like I go over to Europe and I'm getting, you know, dinged less than I do in a dispensary.
Yeah, they've definitely got a little bit smarter. You know, kind of a tangent, but that's another thing I never understood. It's like, all right, in a casino, a strip club, or a dispensary where you have such high margin products, right, where you want your customer to take out their last freaking dollar, why are you putting on these outrageous fees? You know, if you're a casino, you're almost like, look, dude, there's no fees. You can tap into your checking account anytime you want. Instead, they're just such erroneous fees. Same thing in a strip club, same thing at a dispensary. The fundamentals of that is something I've never understood. I'm sure there's a reason they do it.
Yeah, for cannabis at least, like I can think of a couple of reasons why. Like, you know.
That many reasons?
Not. Rephrase the question for me.
So
let me hear this again.
What is your theory on why these three industries, all having very high profit margins, strip clubs, dispensaries,
well, okay,
and casinos?
Yeah, okay, dispensaries, at least, I'll say that, you know, that cut could go towards the egregious amount of licensing fees and, you know, upkeeping the dispensary, because there is a lot, or if you're manufacturing or you know, growing or whatever, and you want to like do all those different facets of cannabis, like it adds up, and especially to do it legally. So I could imagine, you know, that kind of shit would go toward it. But
well, the fees add up, that's for sure. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is, wouldn't you rather, if you're a dispensary owner, right?
I would want someone to just spend all their
money, because yeah, your margins on the product is, yes, the taxes are egregious, and that's a whole other conversation. But I just don't understand why they wouldn't just want to encourage the consumer. Now, at least at a dispensary, it's a flat fee. I've seen $5, $6, $7. Mm-hmm. But the ones like at a casino or a strip club where they're charging a percentage of what you take out blows my mind, right? Because now it's like, well, dude, don't you want the guy to take out as much money as he can? Take your fees. But once it's a percentage, and to your point, I don't think I've ever seen it be a percentage of what you take out at a dispensary. I've only seen it at the two other types of businesses.
I think I've had a couple.
You've seen the percentages
where it's a percentage.
And to your point, you know, I think there's, I guess the only other argument I can see from that dispensary owner is, look, this guy's going to want to take out his money to buy his stuff. He's going to do it anyway, right? So why don't I make my money there as well, the maximum I can? So I guess there's an argument to be made there, but we digress. Now, this bill is following on a December 22nd effort to include cannabis with a budget or defense bill. Again, they always seem to tie it with shit that has no correlation, dude. I don't understand.
Yeah, the FAA is tripping me out. Like,
now, the crazy part of this, and again, I don't know as much about the FAA, but the FAA bill must be passed by May 10, which is the expiration date for a short-term funding bill for the agency, which regulates airline travel. So, I, you know, when they shut down the government, they shut down the government. But are they saying now that by May 10, if they don't pass this FAA bill,
then the cannabis is done?
No, what they're saying is basically the FAA runs out of money. This is, the FAA bill is a bill that is already there, right? They got to pass this bill for funding to fund the towers and the airline coordination systems and all that crap.
Yeah.
They're tying the bill to the banking bill so that the banking bill has more reason to pass, because they know that if all of a sudden all the airlines stop moving, everybody's going to be pissed off at Congress more than they already are. So I think this is a strategy to push it through, but it's not looking good. You know, some of the guys like Schumer and Brown are proponents of it, but as of now, they don't think they have the 60 votes to pass the full Senate. So May 10 is, you know, it's coming up.
Yeah, soon.
It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out, but it's just, it's odd to me, man. When you see an industry that's providing so much money, so much opportunity, and then you see like the regulations and the rules involved and what the hell is going on with that.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, very discouraging. A lot of people put in a lot of hard work for this industry and like have a genuine passion for it. And, you know, I think that should be rewarded and not, the opposite, which it very clearly is the case, especially in California with the current state of the industry. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of players in the game doing too hot right now. So it's a weird little spot for the cannabis industry to be in, because like from the outside it looks super successful and like, oh, like I want to get into cannabis, I want to do this X, Y, and Z with the plant, but it's really fucking difficult right now.
So I learned something when I was in Dallas about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I was speaking at one of our Master Mentors live events, which is a cannabis education company that we have here at Cannabis Talk 101, where we go out into all at least 20 plus states here in this past in the next 12 months, and we educate people on how to get in the industry. And one of the things I learned from one of the speakers there was, you know, I've heard you guys talk about it, specifically you and Joe talked about it, I think, on a segment, what's going on in New York, and where, you know, in California we're now the gold standard of how to have legal marijuana sales and taxation, etc. But you get a state like New York that was trying to, for all intents and purposes, try to duplicate the revenue that we're creating here as a state. And what I found out about, and for those of you who haven't been to New York, back then New York, you smell like shit, bums everywhere, blah, blah, blah. Now you walk down any street, it smells like weed. Everywhere you go in New York, it just smells like weed. And when you walk around, and one of the gals there was like, yeah, I just came back from New York. I probably saw like, you know, a dispensary in every corner. How many in the island of Manhattan, and I may be off by this by a few digits, but it's not that much. How many legal licensed shops do you think are in New York? And that's the segment.
Well, based on the article that I was reading the other day with the content show, where, you know, there were some stupid numbers and it was like the numbers, the data itself at face value made it seem like they're doing favors to certain places, you know? And so, for example, Santa Barbara had a crazy proportion comparatively to the rest of California, where they had over 2,000 active licenses for a very small population, giving it like for every 67 people, there's one person with a license. Now you go to Sacramento, where it was 500,000 people in Sacramento, they have 334 active licenses, which means every like 1,571 people, there is a fucking cannabis license. So it's like, it depends on, you know, where the friends are and who's getting the licenses. And, you know, they get the, we've had one show on here before where social equity, what's the word? He was applying for the social equity for cannabis and found out that, you know, they, the state of California gave the sign up to their friends like 10 minutes prior to the thing actually opening, sued them one. So it's like, that's what you're up against when you're getting the license.
Yeah. Or like private equity bankrolling somebody that's going to get the license. Now in New York, it was something different, dude. What I'm talking about in New York, which blew my mind, and I'd love for you to verify these numbers, but they're really close because the speaker had actually looked them up and he had it all up. But in New York, there's roughly less than 100. So substantially less, but less than 100 legal licenses that were issued in the city of Manhattan. There's over 30,000 marijuana dispensaries in New York. 30,000 to 100. So 100 of them legal and 30,000 not. So chances are, if you've been in New York and you bought weed at a dispensary, that dispensary was not a legal run operation.
Yep.
Now, you know, diving into the numbers and why this matters, check this out. This is pretty funny when you really break it down, dude. So New York's licensed operators did $150 million in sales, and they collected $33 million in taxes. $33 million may sound like a lot, but for New York and selling cannabis in a legal market, it is nothing.
It's minute.
To give you a comparison, Missouri, which most people have never been to, substantially smaller and concentrated in population. Missouri, which is only adult use cannabis in February 2023. They only launched it this past year. They've already had $1 billion in sales in the first year, dude. So the math is just astronomical. And what's now coming out, New York in its infinite wisdom, is they've come up with a budget to not necessarily shut people down, but to padlock their front doors for up to 1 year if they're an illegal shop. Notice they don't even shut them down. They just padlock the front doors. And that's good. Dude, so they have a... They have a $237 billion budget, and they're carving out a piece of this budget. At a press conference here on April 19, they stood up and they said, illegal shops will not disappear overnight. New Yorkers will eventually see a change in their communities. The insanity stops now. But to me, man, when I see what New York is doing in so many different ways, it just seems like the insanity does not stop.
Never does. Hasn't stopped. I mean, at least since I started paying attention to it, like during COVID and everything. It's been a madhouse over there.
And the other not necessarily fun fact, but a fact that kind of, you know, really gets your eyes open to when, you know, when regulation ends up going the wrong way in the alternative way, right, is when you see what's happening is in California, California and New York, where the taxes are egregiously high on the product. There's statistics that say, well, legal sales went from, and I'm making up a number here, guys, in California, call it, went from $23 billion to $20 billion. So there was a 12% decline. But if you live out here and you understand what the space is, it's not that it declined. It declined at the legal dispensaries, which means the dispensaries paying the taxes. But that's because the taxes have become so egregious and the consumers, like, well, saying, yeah, the black market is now thriving. And this is something you guys have talked about. I've become educated on it by listening to you guys, but it's something that really starts making you think. And again, I bring up all these not to just have conversations, but there's where there's pain, where there's what's the word I'm looking for, when there's disparity in the marketplace between whether it's the consumer or the government, or the government and taxes, or legislation or regulation, is where you can find opportunities, totally. Right? So when we're out here on Master Mentors, or when I'm out on the field and talking to entrepreneurs or cannabis as we talk to them, you know, everybody thinks, well, gosh, you know, the market in California is saturated and cannabis, everybody's already making money in it. Why would I want to get into it? I'm like, that's you in your own little bubble. You know, in California, we may seem like it feels like that, but when you actually look at the percentages, the year-over-year growth, the number of users, the health benefits, it's finally now becoming allowed to be even medically tested. You know, up until a few years ago, we couldn't even have studies on it. So it is going to have a lot of opportunities, guys. Keep looking out for ways that you can make money in the space. Dive into the show, listen to the show. Now we're going to take a break here, but when I come back, I'm going to talk to you about Tilray stock. It's a cannabis stock. It's a Canadian company, but it's something that I think most people who are investing in the cannabis space all have questions about. We're going to talk about that when we come back here on Financial Fridays on iHeartRadio.
We'll be right back with more Financial Fridays with the Inside Investor, Tony Kaye. Make sure you follow Tony at The Insider Investor.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101's Financial Fridays with the Inside Investor, Tony Kaye. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to the show now.
Master Mentors Live. You heard me just talk about it on the last segment, guys. Check out the website, mastermentorslive.com. It's coming to a city near you. We have multiple cities right now that I'm looking at the screen. If you're watching it on YouTube, click the link. Check out where we're coming to you. It's an absolutely free 90-minute workshop. We're going to show you how to make money in the industry. Whether you want to buy the plant, touch the plant, sell your own joints, white label, have a CBD product, have a show like we do, have a print magazine, do concerts around it. Doesn't matter what you do. There's thousands of ancillary businesses around the cannabis industry. It's the fastest growing money-making sector in the United States, if not globally. This is your chance to cash in on the modern day green rush. We call it the modern day gold green rush, if you will, right? Check it out, Master Mentors Live. We're coming to a city near you. Look forward to seeing you guys out there. Now we're back here on Financial Fridays with my man Connor. He's not just my sound engineer, but he's my soundboard when I come up with controversial ideas, rabbit holes, or better yet, even investments. Today's episode has been dedicated to giving you guys a little bit of background on some of the current events happening, not just in the cannabis space, but in ideas and concepts that are coming out, legislation, regulation that's coming out that could affect your pocketbook. But I wanted to tap into Tilray, and this is something that Joe Grande's been really, you know, pushing me and encouraging me to talk a little bit more about with my background on Wall Street. And as you get most of you, if you've heard the first episode or heard me talk on some of the other episodes, you know, 22 years on Wall Street, I saw all the good, the bad, the ugly, all the shit you see in the movies, from Wolf of Wall Street to the movie Wall Street to Boiler Room. All that shit is real and then more. So I became really disenfranchised on it. Obviously, I got a crazy story, but I learned a lot about, you know, the warning signs with these stocks and the hype, et cetera. And I'd love to talk to you and Daniel, our producer, about it, because Tilray was one of those things when Canada first legalized, it became like almost like the Facebook stock of weed. Would you say that that's a pretty good analogy?
And like, I'm not too well versed on Tilray, but just from seeing the whole initial reaction with Canada, like I could assume that it was a pretty big commodity.
Yeah. And this goes without saying, I think we have a disclaimer at the open of the show. Nothing that I tell you guys is intended as financial advice. I don't own any of the stocks or brands or companies that I talk about, but Tilray's, I'm not invested in it. I was never invested in it, mainly because I don't trust the Canadian stock market and how they function and the way that they rolled this out. But it became a multi-billion dollar cap raise company, if I'm not mistaken. But what most people don't know, and I'm curious if you knew this, but Tilray's right now, money and cash, they burn through cash like it's going out of business. Mm. They acquired a significant stake in the convertible debt of MedMen. And they've made, and obviously MedMen, for those of you that don't know, was a massive company. They were in New York. They were out here. Very well run, pretty almost like an Apple store, dispensaries. They had multiple verticals, if I'm not mistaken, and for whatever reasons. And I don't know the owners. I don't know much about the brand other than they started having financial issues. I would talk to some of the employees. They weren't getting paid. And, you know, usually where there's smoke, there's fire. And if I'm not mistaken, they've closed down dozens of stores and they're having serious issues, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, Tilray, you know, they haven't made the best bets in the cannabis industry. But what they did start doing is they started acquiring alcohol companies, right? Mm-hmm. And Tilray's bet for, before I did this segment, I'd reached out to some friends in the market and that are a little bit more active in the stock market. And I said, why are you investing in the stock? And everybody was banking on a nationwide legalization of cannabis in America. Which, for those of you that don't know, interstate cannabis transfer is illegal, right? We can't sell our weed to Oklahoma. Oklahoma can't sell their weed to us, vice versa. There's brands that can have brands in those different markets, but they have to purchase the raw product in that state.
Correct?
And so the thought process was, you know, especially with the current administration coming in saying that he's going to waive everybody's criminal and we're going to make it legal. Every freaking president, doesn't matter who you know or which side you're on, has promised that as they come in, I think they want the stoner vote, you know, and they come in and they do some bullshit and, oh, we'll let these guys out of prison, but these other guys are still in there. So nobody's really fulfilled that promise. And we sit here in 2024 with 15 other class drugs being worse than cannabis, better than cannabis. The government right now, if you look at the class schedule of drugs, will tell you the fentanyl, speed, cocaine, heroin is safer than marijuana, which blows my mind.
Nuts.
It just blows my mind, right? So as they tell you this, as they're shoveling this down your throat, at the same token, cannabis is still federally illegal. So I think Tilray came in with this promise, this dream, probably some of the road shows of how they stole the stock and raised capital was with the vision that, hey, once America goes legal, it opens up all the growers in Canada to be able to sell their weed down to here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hasn't happened. Now, why do I think the Tilray is not a solid investment? Several reasons. One, they're burning through cash. And the only way they can grow right now, they can't grow anymore in California. I'm sorry, in Canada, they have to acquire other companies, right? They have enough cash. They're burning through cash. So they'll take on hundreds of millions of dollars of MedMen's debt. Well, that went to shit. You know, the way that at least I understand it. Then they started looking at alcohol. They started acquiring large stakes in different alcohol, non-THC, just regular alcohol brands. And that actually ended up getting them solvent. They actually have decent cash flow. And if you just looked at them as an alcohol company, they're doing well. But they still want to be in the cannabis space. They still want to be relevant in the cannabis space. They believe in those opportunities. And I think, to me, proof is in the pudding. Past performance, there's this disclaimer whenever you buy any investment, past performance is not a guarantee of future results, but past performance can be a good indicator of future results. You follow where I'm going with this?
Of course.
And if you look at, you know, what they're doing right now, they burned through $18 million in cash from its day-to-day operating activities just in a 12-month period, okay? This doesn't factor into capital expenditures, growth-related activities, et cetera. So they're burning through cash. Because they're going into alcohol, they had a vision we're going all in on cannabis, right? That's now kind of fell apart. They're back to alcohol. So to me, it's like, you know, you can't be like that old, in the movies, the dude on Times Square is like, what do you want, a gold watch? I got one right here. You want a gold-plated toothbrush? I got one right here. You want toilet paper roller? I got one right here. So you can't be a jack of all trades. And, you know, especially in when you talk about the ATF, the alcohol. So is it a cannabis product? Are you doing alcohol? And obviously, in California right now, and I think most of the legalized states, you can't sell alcohol and cannabis out of the same facility. Even the consumption bars, they have different,
permits,
yeah. and or you have to have different addresses, et cetera, et cetera. Right. When we do festivals, I've learned now through being here that, the festival address has to be different. If you have two facilities, one can sell cannabis, one can sell alcohol, but you can't do both.
Yeah. You have to have like the beer village designated, have a permit for it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is, if you take a company like that, that's putting all their eggs into now alcohol and cannabis, and now it does become legalized here, they're going to have to make another decision, because I have a feeling that the regulators, and as much as our Congress loves to make up rules and pitfalls for companies, they're going to make them pick. And now these guys are going to have to burn through reverse cash. So that's my theory on that. Did you own any of it? I know you were active in some of these stocks. Have you ever owned any of it?
No, not of this company. No.
Daniel, had you owned it before? I heard you talking about it. He's pulling up his mic right here, but this guy's probably got a bigger portfolio than I do.
So technically, I did, like, a long time ago. I did invest in Tilray. It wasn't a great idea, unfortunately. And I'm not telling anybody at home.
Exactly.
Don't go do this or do that. But for, like, I just got out of it. And I actually ended up just staying away from companies like that. I ended up actually, I don't know if you heard of Grow Generation.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
They are like a hydroponic. They specialize in hydroponics. And right before the pandemic, I invested in, probably like 50 stocks. And then it ended up shooting like $40 each one up. So I ended up cashing out from there. And now we're up with the cryptocurrency, baby. Now
here we go. So how much, if you were a early adopter of Tilray, if you had to guess off the top of your heads, how much do you think the stock is down from its all-time high?
It's probably guess. Worth.
Don't look it up. Just guess.
So when I bought it, it was what is it right now?
It's like $1.18, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's like $1 something. But yep. When I bought it, it was up there in like the tens, I think. Or
yeah, it's
like
$1.09. You nailed it, brother. It's actually down 90%, guys. Yeah. And there's I forget what the stat was back when I was on Wall Street. There's this statistic that if a stock has fallen 90%, less than like 3% of them ever end up actually making a decent comeback. They'll bounce around up and down, but there's a reason somebody loses that. There was this great article on Motley Fool that I thought really put it into perspective, which covers a lot of what I just said, but it said Tilray hasn't been shy when it comes to acquisitions. In Canada, it acquired Hexo, a problematic and unprofitable cannabis company, only for the sake of gaining market share. And you understand what that means? They bought shit that wasn't making money just so they could have more consumers. Yeah. But you're buying a business model that's failing. So that doesn't make sense to me, unless you're really just chasing market share to then drive up prices. But there's enough players in the industry. You're not going to monopolize the market in Canada.
Yeah, that seems stupid.
In 2021, it acquired a majority position in convertible notes of multi-state operator MedMen in the U.S. in the hopes of one day potentially acquiring their business and using it as a way to expand into the United States. MedMen, unfortunately, turned out to be a bad investment, another one, and now appears to have serious liquidity issues, which means they're not going to be able to pay back that convertible debt.
Yep.
And it reportedly owes employees money and has been closing stores. The danger is that Tilray hasn't exactly been a great judge of cannabis business in the past, even though it's a cannabis stock. And if it were to pursue more risky acquisitions in the United States, that may exasperate its cash flow concerns and push back any hopes of profitability as well. Acquiring businesses for the sake of growth in an already troubled industry wouldn't make Tilray a better buy. And they close it out with, you should stay clear of the stock. It's fallen over 90% during the past 3 years. Investors should be careful not to assume a recovery. If we said, hey, next year it's going full legal, then yeah, I would put a little bit into it.
Yeah, but, for sure.
But the way things are going and as much other crap we got to deal with in this country, it just doesn't seem like it's a priority anymore for the politicians. They're going after different fear tactics to get their votes on both sides. So I don't see cannabis legalization happening in this administration, nor in the next 3 to 4 years. Personally, I think you're going to see more states go, and I think there's going to be tremendous opportunity in individual states like Ohio, Tennessee, Dallas, etc.
Yeah.
But I just don't see it happening federally for the time being.
Yeah, I think like 10 years, 15 years.
God, That sounds like a lifetime away.
But, yeah. Like, but that's realistically, but that's realistically, what I think.
That's, yeah.
Based on all of the events that have happened in the past 10 years, we'll say, you would think that they would have gotten it cooking from 2014 to 2024.
Yep.
But it ain't fully cooking yet.
No, no, and it isn't. And I think if there was, you know, as much hype as was around this current administration or even Obama, where it was like, hey, we want to let people out for, you know, misdemeanor, marijuana, blah, blah, blah. Neither of them did it. Nobody did it. Trump didn't do it. Obama didn't do it. Clinton was the one that started the problems and privatized prisons. But again, another rabbit hole. Point is, it ain't happening anytime soon. And that's why Tillery isn't good. Now, I brought up that individual stock for several reasons. One, obviously, in my opinion, and again, this is completely my personal opinion, I could be completely wrong, but it's not anywhere close to the stock that I would put in my horizon of purchase. But the lessons learned here, and how does a company that's worth billions of dollars make their stock go down 90% when you're in the drug game? I mean, at the end of the day, you're in the marijuana business and you're losing 90%. It's because you made bad business decisions, right? You weren't surrounded by the right people that are crunching numbers. And someone like you, who's, you know, never worked at a Wall Street firm, hasn't had a multi-billion dollar company ever, but it's just common sense. Why would you invest into another company that's losing money just to acquire their customer base if you have a product that's not unique? It's not like you invented weed. It's not like you're the only company that can sell cannabis in Canada. So in my opinion, it becomes a very bad, poor choice. And then when you talk about convertible debt with MedMen, I didn't know their numbers enough to really look through that. But now when you see another, you know, strike two on them, usually when you see two strikes on a big company like that, you're not going to see a third strike. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned by analyzing different news articles like this, right? Even if you have no intention of investing in the stock market, even if you have no intention of investing in the cannabis industry, I think by putting yourself out there, just look at the top news stories on any given day. I could create years worth of content in just 1 month by just looking at different articles and be like, all right, what's the real agenda here? What can I learn from this that'll allow me to save money? And what's the opportunities that I can teach other people?
Totally.
Cool. Totally. Do you have any hot stock picks, or what are you putting your money in right now? If you had $5,000, what are you investing in?
Well, I want to look at getting in some of the money markets because I see some high yield rates right now. You know, I've got some investments in some solar stocks and all that. But you know, I've got to save up some more to be able to make a real investment. So I've kind of just got a few things here and there in a portfolio, but nothing.
Well, I'm going to tee up something, and I appreciate you saying that because you got me thinking. I always love ending the show on an immediate action that some of you, if not all, not all of you, but some of you can take right now that you can take from the show, go and create free money for yourself. You like free money?
We love it.
So he pointed out something right now, high yield money markets. As for the past 20 years, interest rates in this, well, I take that back. For the past 10 years, ever since September 11, interest rates in this country have been close to zero. Even if you're getting a CD or a money market or annuity paying you 2 to 3%, you're paying taxes on that at ordinary income tax, which most people don't know that that's what interest income is, which is the highest tax income that you can make. So when you were making like 2 to 3% at locking up your money for 5 years in a CD, you're taking home maybe 1 to 2%, right? Now, for the first time, because of inflation, interest rates are almost approaching double digits, right? There's some high yield money markets paying 5 to 6.
Yeah, exactly.
If you lock up your money on an internet bank, be careful on those. Make sure they're correctly FDIC insured. And by the way, money market funds are not FDIC insured. So there's something to be cautious of. But there's really safe, very safe ways to make 7 to 9% on your money right now. And there's still, if you have good credit, if you have good income, or if you have decent credit, good income, there are some cards or credit lines offering you money 2 to 3%. And guys, it's the easiest way to make money in this country, which is called natural arbitrage. So if you have something paying you 7%, you have something else paying, you know, prompt, you can borrow money at 2% and make it at 7% without taking risk. That's 5% of free money that you can take, right? So if you do have the ability to pull money out of your house, an equity line, you're a senior citizen, you don't want to take any risk in the market or anything else like that, there are very creative ways that you can borrow money at a cheap rate and lock it up for a year or two in a CD and just take that extra money. Just call the arbitrage. Google it, arbitrage. Very simple concept.
It's critical now to get some income.
And it only works right now, right? Because again, with interest rates being for the past, you know, in the past 15, what, gosh, it's been 22 years since September 11th. So 22, 23, 24 years, interest rates have been at zero. And now they're all of a sudden quadrupled and quintupled or whatever. You're at closer to 7, 8, 9. You take a little bit of risk and get 8, 9% in some really secured lending funds. But guys, look into it. I always like to show you opportunities. Connor, anything else you want to add before we close out?
Just thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure rapping with you.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate you being here. And more importantly, I appreciate the entire staff here at Cannabis Talk 101. It's somebody that, you know, we're almost approaching about a year of shows. And I always try to pick a crew of people that have been helping me out. Today, since you're on here, I want to shout out to the entire production crew, from you, Diego, Connor, the girls up front, Jen, the new gal, Jenna, I believe. Yes. Looking forward to having her on the show.
Daniel.
And of course, Erica out there. A lot of people behind the scenes that make the magic here, guys. I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you for listening to Financial Fridays here on iHeartRadio CT101. I'm Tony K, and you can always find me on Instagram at The Insider. And remember, good God.
The Insider Investor.
Remember to keep that wallet tight. Keep your mind right. I'm going to see you next Friday on Financial Fridays.
Thank you for listening to Financial Fridays with the Insider Investor, Tony K, on Cannabis Talk 101, the world's number one source for everything cannabis.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.